Okay, so today my guest is author Michael Koenig, who wrote the book The Smart Money, How the World's Best Sports Bettors Beat the Bookies Out of Millions, and amongst many other books that he has. Michael, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Nice to speak with you, Rich.
Okay, great. I know it has been a few years since you wrote this, since you were doing all this. You know, basically your time period covered the late 90s, early 2000s, but The Smart Money really is one of the best books out there, I think, on sports betting and the interior working. So if you don't mind, could you share with us a little bit and tell my listeners about your background in the industry?
Well, I started out just writing about gambling and hanging around the casinos and really sharp bettors a lot. And in the mid-90s, one of the sharpest of the sharp bettors invited me to come to work for him and his syndicate, and The Smart Money covers my years as a member of the Brain Trust, which was, and I think remains, the world's biggest and most successful sports betting syndicate. And to stress the part that's probably important to your readers and listeners, we were never bookmakers. We were just like you guys, bettors. But we beat the man.
Well, that's true. You talk about your time with the syndicate, and in my reading, trying to read between the lines, you talk about one of the biggest, but it sounds like you were working with what most would consider the biggest name in the industry. What type of resources did he and the Brain Trust as a whole have and use at their disposal? Was it, you know, you talk about in the book computer models. Was it just that? Do they have a team of statisticians? Do they have sources on the ground? Basically, just what were they utilizing to ensure that they won on a consistent basis?
All of the above. Advanced computer modeling, which I think today is more prevalent than it was even 5 years ago. It's much easier to model games now than it was then, but we had some of the earliest and best algorithms. When I broke off and formed my own group called the Hollywood Boys, the cat I was working with was a programmer from MIT who knew absolutely nothing about sports. He literally did not even know what a safety was in NFL football, but he was a brilliant computer guy, and he figured out a way to exploit some numerical anomalies in teasers. These days, there are all sorts of guys out there, probably from high school age up, who have this kind of intelligence and acumen with algorithms. So then you go to the next level. People who were very plugged into injuries, people who were very plugged into local weather conditions, a sort of network of intelligence. But the biggest attribute that the Brain Trust had that the average bettor doesn't have is, and was, a gigantic bankroll. And the importance of that, Rich, is that the Brain Trust was always in the game, never had to worry about having to sit out because the bankroll was getting dangerously low. And with a bankroll as large as we were working with, we could fade the variances and the fluctuations and just keep grinding the money through the mill at the expected rate of return that we knew we would get in the long term and stayed in the game. So that's a long way of saying that we were able to find an edge and just continually exploit it. Doesn't mean we won every day, doesn't mean we won every week, but we did win every season.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because people can, in this day and age, you can get access to a lot of those things, but one thing you either have or you don't is your bankroll. So to hear you say that that's the number one thing, that's interesting. Mm. Just a question to follow up with that. If you had access, say for instance somebody had access to the plays of a super group, you know, like the Brains or, you know, another group like that, is it critical to ensure that you're getting the same exact number that they're getting, or is it enough to be on the right side of a game? For instance, if they put a play, they have an order out for a game at plus, you know, 7, and by the time, you know, you get to it, it's down to 6.5 or 6. It was the information that good where it's, you would still say in most cases, yeah, that's a play, or just if you didn't get the 7, forget about it?
I think it's more the former. The quality of the number is extremely important, and especially when you're talking about very key numbers like the example you gave. Now, you know, the difference between, say, 8 and 8.5 is very small, but the difference between 7 and 6.5, of course, is large.
Sure.
The farther away one gets from the optimal number, the less expected value there is in that bet. And the way we looked at it, we were very disciplined. If we didn't get the number or better that we were looking for, we laid off of it. Like, a half point off wasn't good enough for us. So you can extrapolate that if you are a follower, a casual bettor, you are not getting nearly the edge that you should be if you're betting second or third numbers.
Well, we've been talking a lot about that in the office lately, where how it's, you know, it's almost comparable to the stock market, you know, in an IPO. You know, it's gonna go at $14 a share, but by the time most people get to it, it's already doubled and it's basically lost its expected value quality there. And we're saying that, you know, in this market, it's basically the same thing.
Well, another way to look at it, to exploit those moves, however, is if there are enough followers who, let's take your example, the order from the big syndicate goes out for the underdog plus 7, and they gobble up all they can before the number changes around the world to 6.5 and possibly even 6. If there are enough followers out there who would compel the line movers, the bookmakers, to move that line to, say, 5.5, there would certainly be arbitrage opportunities in now taking the favorite at minus 5.5. The lines, particularly in major sports such as pro football, they're not off by that much, Rich. So a 1.5 move around a very key number, as long as it's not related to a late-breaking injury, there's some value in then taking the other side.
Right. It doesn't seem, like you said, in the NFL that you're going to see that type of move. I have seen, just in the early part of the season, college games moving a ton. Was that your experience? I'm seeing now mostly NFL games. You know, if they come out with 3, they're not moving off at 3 for anything. They'll put it up at, you know, lay 25 on the over, you know, laying the 3. But college games have been moving like crazy. I've seen some move 2.5, 3, even 3.5 points so far in the season. Was that something you noticed back then as well?
Absolutely. And there is much more variance and fluctuation in the college game, which is why, for instance, we would never bet teasers on college. The key numbers that we were trying to cross with our NFL teaser strategy, they just weren't worth that much in college because there is so much move and the numbers are so elastic compared to NFL. The NFL, all the information is out there. It's virtually impossible to know anything that somebody else doesn't know. So the challenge becomes, how does one analyze that information? How does one deal with the information that everybody else has? In college, it's still possible, especially when you're talking about secondary conferences, for some cats to know more than others.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I'm seeing as well. So that's very interesting. I'm going to go back to something you did just touch upon, and it's also in the book. On page 198, you talk about the frustration when sports books would move their number simply because another shop did. I get you call that moving on air. Mm-hmm. And that just made it much more difficult to get the amounts down that you want to get down. Can you explain why they would do that, and how would you guys try to get around that?
The reason they do that is because they are under the impression that if they know that the line move is in fact coming from sharp guys, from people who really do know more about the numbers than they do. And trust me, the best sports bettors know way more about the numbers than the bookmakers do. And that's one of the themes that you'll find in the smart money. So, you know, they're scared, and they want to protect their franchise. And if they are certain that that number is coming from smart information, the way they think is, well, why should I even take a bet where I know I'm going to have to move it to the prevailing number anyway? Why don't I just move on air and make the people who want the sharp side get less value than they would if they got the best number? That's their thinking. The way that we got around that was occasionally playing opposites, putting out fake orders, and being very careful with certain games. If we knew that it was going to be easy to upset the number, we, instead of going full out and grabbing as much as we could right away, we would pick and peck and try to keep it unclear where the money was actually coming from.
Well, it's a cat and mouse game going back and forth, and I can tell you still that's going on to this day. You'll see games move on the Don Best screen, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, you know, a day or two later, they come completely flying back the other way. So you know that was a move just generated just to get things moving in the opposite direction.
And Rich, if you see those opportunities, I'm assuming that if you can be right there on both sides of those moves when they happen, again, the arbitrage opportunities are very strong.
Yeah, it does present itself, especially, it's all a matter of timeliness and when you're getting the information. You know, if you're finding out on Monday that a play's on Bowling Green and the game doesn't move till Thursday, well, you've had plenty of time to get your order in at the number that they're looking to get. So that's one thing that, you know, we're trying to move into and capitalize on and get into that information network. I'm curious. I know you don't have much time left. I'll just ask you, though, do you keep up with the industry at all? Have you been following what's going on in the offshore betting with all these sports books closing down, et cetera? And if so, you know, where do you see it going in the next few years?
I'm going to give you a very general answer, Rich, and it's this. People love to bet on sports. They love to gamble. And no amount of prohibition or legal hassle is going to stop people from doing stuff they want to do. We've seen it with the so-called war on drugs. It's not stopping people from enjoying their marijuana. We saw it in the 20s with prohibition on alcohol. It didn't stop people from having their gin mills. People like to bet on sports. So no matter the legal complications, this pastime and industry is going to continue. And I would just suggest that as with the prohibition on alcohol and as with the prohibition on recreational drugs, if the authorities continue to have a prohibit and prosecute mentality instead of a license and regulate mentality, they will turn a lot of people into criminals. But they are not going to stop sports betting from happening.
Well, you're preaching to the choir on that one, especially with the war on drugs analogy. I couldn't agree more. I'd like to get you out of here on kind of a fun one that we like to end with, if you have time for one more question.
Go for it.
All right. If say in this day today, $1 million is hypothetically dropped into your lap, and the only way you can make it grow is through sports betting, what would be your first steps for formulating a profitable strategy?
Great question. The first thing I would do is look to find weaknesses in secondary sports. I would shy away from things like the NFL and Major League Baseball and NBA, where all the information is known. With things like MMA and car racing and well, maybe tennis isn't a good idea because we've had such a lot of unreliable actors in that. But you get my point that
right.
I would be looking for areas where it really is possible for sharp, inquisitive folks to know more than everybody else. The problem with those markets, Rich, is because the bookies know that they don't know anything, the vig, the juice that's built into some of those lines is so gigantic because they're so scared that it's very difficult to turn a profit. Hypothetically, if I could find something where it was reasonable juice that I knew it wasn't going to eat up my entire edge, that's where I would look.
That's great. We get a different answer to that question all the time, and that was also definitely one of the very insightful stuff. Michael Konek, I want to thank you very much. Once again, he is the author of Smart Money. And what's your latest book do you have out? I know you had one come out within the last year or so.
Well, speaking of the war on drugs, my latest book is called Reefer Gladness, Stories, Essays, and Riffs on Marijuana.
Great
stuff.
You can
learn all about it at my official website, michaelkonek.com.
All right, there it is, folks, michaelkonek.com. He is a great author. Go check out his latest book. Check out the Smart Money also. Michael, thanks again for taking the time to speak with us today.
Good talking with you, Rich.
Take care.